So, if the markets are Princess Leia,
and Ben Bernanke is a Jedi Master, here's a rough transcript.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
From APM, American Public Media in New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm David Brancaccio. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Thursday, June 7th.
Coming up, China cuts interest rates, but will the Federal Reserve chairman suggest something similar?
The rain in Spain falls especially on its banks.
Plus, a moment to breathe deeply, stretch, and think about the business of yoga.
And goggles that apparently make you thinner.
Those are all coming up just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
That Star Wars reference you just heard was an actual headline in the Atlantic magazine this week, and that's because the markets really are looking to Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke as the last hope of stopping a global economic slowdown. Today, China cut its key interest rate 0.25%, the first cut since 2008. We're going to hear more about that in a moment. But first, to Ben Bernanke, who is going to be testifying today on Capitol Hill, and Wall Street will be watching, as Marketplace's David Gura reports.
Members of the Federal Reserve have signaled they'd be willing to support further action if the economy gets worse. In the past, the Fed has pushed down interest rates, but now they're at all-time lows. Karen Petru is with Federal Financial Analytics, and she says that despite the fact there's not much more the Fed can do, investors are hopeful Ben Bernanke will decide to do something.
The big issue for him are the hints that the market was so ecstatic about yesterday that there'll be some new Fed easing.
Fed easing, that the Federal Reserve will decide once again to buy more bonds. But skeptics are worried about inflation and about the Fed overstepping its bounds. Kevin Jakes, who teaches finance at Baldwin Wallace College, says that's why the Federal Reserve is being careful.
This is an incredibly difficult balancing act. They want to help the economy move forward, yet at the same time they recognize there are potential drawbacks to any policy they undertake.
What Bernanke wants to avoid is doing too much or too little, putting him at risk of becoming this economy's Darth Vader. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
Now let's talk about what happened today in China, a surprise interest rate cut. Marketplace's Scott Tong covered China for years. He joins us this morning from Washington. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, let's start with why the Chinese central bank did this.
Well, the People's Bank of China often telegraphs their moves. So the fact that it surprised us, I think it's got a lot of our attention. China's economy has been slowing down 5 quarters in a row. You can see it in manufacturing numbers. Their sales to Europe are soft, and we know why that's the case. Borrowing is slowing down. I mean, China's not all about exports, Jeremy, but it does business with a whole lot of countries that don't look great right now. Europe, India, us. So that's what they're worried about.
Well, you say it's slowing down, but it is growing much faster than our economy. It's growing very fast. Why are they so worried there about a slowdown?
Well, you and I would take 8% any day, right?
Yeah.
China has a lot of people who are still moving from the countryside to the cities, just like in America 100 years ago. So they have to keep creating jobs for these people. A lot of new people entering the workforce. And the underlying reality in a one-party state is this tacit deal that the government will keep people's lives improving at 8% a year, and the people will stay out of the streets and keep the regime in power.
Marketplace's Scott Tong in Washington. Thanks a lot, Scott.
You're welcome.
Well, staying with the central bank theme, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke is on Capitol Hill today, and he's under pressure to do some more stimulating of the economy right here in the United States. Adolfo Laurenti is Deputy Chief Economist with Mesirow Financial. He's with us live from Chicago. Hi, Adolfo.
Good morning.
Well, do you think that Ben Bernanke is going to follow the lead of the Chinese central bank and do something here as well?
You know, it appears increasingly likely that some type of action will be taken by the Federal Reserve as well. Economic data has been soft to disappointing, most notably the labor market is still struggling. This is a major concern for Bernanke and Janet Yellen and many other of the Fed Open Market Committee members. So yes, it seems likely that some type of action will be taken.
Well, it's interesting because I wonder whether we should be concerned that we keep having to go to the Fed for help, that the economy can't really stand up on its own two feet right now.
Well, it is major concern in two respects. First of all, this economy seems to fail to generate self-sustaining growth, and that is a major implication, not just for the job market, but think about our deficit, the investment in new technology, how much we can spend in the education, healthcare, and so on. So that's a major concern, but it's also a concern about what the Fed can do, because on the monetary policy front, most of the low-hanging fruits have already been taken. It's easy to cut rates, but the Fed funds rates are already at zero. It's easy to do some quantitative easing at first, but with the long-term rates we are already low, it's very difficult to get a good bang for the buck. So there is still some option. The Fed can always go big, but the margins of actions are getting narrower and narrower.
Adolfo Laurenti, Deputy Chief Economist at Mesirow Financial, thanks very much.
Thank you.
In a hopeful sign for jobs today, new claims for unemployment benefits dropped in the last week. The number 377,000 is lower by 12,000, the first drop since April, and was aligned closely with forecasts. But this is a volatile number, and it remains to be seen if it builds into a bona fide trend. Among the challenges for the aforementioned Fed chairman, interest rates in America are already near 60-year lows, and cheap borrowing is not the only reason people decide whether or not to hire or to buy. Finance professor Kevin Jakes is at Baldwin Wallace College in Ohio.
The difficulty is, even if you drop interest rates to record low levels, that doesn't necessarily mean consumers are going out and buying cars, purchasing new homes. That doesn't necessarily mean businesses are investing in plants and equipment and machinery and expanding their production facilities.
Low interest rates are also not in everyone's interest, something we're about to examine for Attitude Check, our weekly partnership with Gallup.
And the latest poll numbers suggest margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said.
Joining me is Gallup's editor-in-chief, Frank Newport. Greetings, Frank.
Good morning.
So we have Chairman Bernanke on Capitol Hill today, and the standard piece of economic theory is that lower interest rates means that people are supposed to say, golly, with financing that cheap, I'm going to buy something, maybe a house or expand a business. What do your researchers find when they ask Americans about interest rates?
Well, you know what we found, and these are investors we're talking to. This is part of our Wells Fargo Gallup Investor in Retirement Optimism Index that we do every month. We ask about the possible negative consequences of low interest rates as opposed to the positive ones. And, you know, we always have to be aware, I think, that when you do something to fix problem A, it could have problem B. And we see some awareness of that. We actually gave people a choice, and we had up to 3 out of 10 investors who said the harm of interest rates, low interest rates, outweighs the benefit, particularly the harm being that it hurts retirement and investment income. And over 6 in 10 said that Bernanke et al. Should take into account the negative impact of low interest rates, particularly for older Americans and retirees, when they make these decisions to keep them so low.
You're talking about one of the great divides in America, because maybe you do want lower interest rates if you're looking for a job, because then maybe the potential employer will have some money to borrow to be able to hire you. But if you are an established person hoping that your investment income is going to keep them safe in retirement, you want higher interest rates.
That's absolutely right. We found a third of Americans who say they have delayed their retirement because of low interest rates, which is amazing. We found people, you know, up to a third who say they are taking riskier investments. That's why the gold, you see so many gold advertisements now. We see people who say they've given less to charity because of the low interest rates. They put money into investments they might otherwise avoid. So we really see that a lot of Americans, particularly these investors, are telling us that, yeah, that's great for the stimulus effect of low interest rates on the economy. But boy, particularly if you're older, it could have some really negative consequences.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at Gallup. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Well, now to Spain, which asked investors for a few billion dollars this morning in a bond auction, and the country got the money it was looking for, though at a slightly higher interest rate than the last auction. But there's another major sector of the economy in Spain in a desperate search for cash. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is in Madrid this morning as part of a tour of Europe, and he joins us now. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, it sounds like you find yourself right in the center of the euro crisis storm today.
Yes, indeed. The Spanish banking system is now drowning in debt, and the worry is the Spanish government may not have enough money to keep the banking system afloat. What you've got here is a sort of bizarre setup. The banks and the government are propping each other up. The banks are buying the government bonds. and the government is pumping the money it's raised into the banks. As somebody said, it's like two drunks propping each other up on a Friday night.
Well, Stephen, let me ask you, you've been traveling all over Europe on this tour that you're on right now. Have you seen different attitudes about the crisis in different places that you've been?
Yes, in a sense. It's a pub crawl, Jeremy. Let's call a spade a spade. I've been to five different bars in five different Eurozone countries to find out how people feel. And in the countries that have been the worst affected economically by the crisis, such as Ireland and Greece, people really are drowning their sorrows. But what I would say overall, there is a kind of calm. People are numb. The crisis has gone on for such a long time. It's just there in the background. They're just not focusing on bailouts and bond sales. And the big question is this the calm before the storm?
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in Madrid, who, when we asked him to cover some liquidity troubles in Europe, he seems to have taken us literally. Thank you, Stephen.
I'll say cheers to that, Jeremy.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
At the University of Nevada today, President Obama pushed for making it easier for low-income students to put off their federal loan payments. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports.
The income-based repayment plan caps monthly student loan payments at 15% of the graduate's salary. The problem is only 2 or 3% of borrowers take advantage of the program.
We think part of the challenge has been that it's complicated, it's hard.
That's Education Secretary Arne Duncan on a conference call with reporters. He says the application asks for all sorts of income and tax information. By this fall, borrowers will be able to electronically transfer IRS data directly into their online application.
Just making the process itself much less complicated, much more simple, and hopefully we'll see many more folks take advantage going forward.
The average student loan is around $22,000, says Terry Hartle of the American Council on Education.
It's clear that the administration is reacting to widespread concerns that some students borrow frightful sums of money to pay for their college education and, not surprisingly, have difficulty paying it back.
The challenge, he says, is to get the word out to low-income students that they might be eligible for a break on their loans. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Facebook is still trading almost 30% below the price it went public at a few weeks ago. Investors still aren't convinced that the company has figured out a way to make money, especially on mobile phones. But this week, Twitter's CEO said their mobile ads are booming, already outpacing web ads and on track to keep growing.
Peter Kafka writes for All Things Digital and has been covering this mobile ad puzzle. And he joins us now for our Midday Extra. Morning, Peter.
Hi there.
So what's going on here? Has Twitter solved Facebook's problem?
Twitter solves Twitter's problem. That's what Twitter is saying. Twitter, for a long time, was one of these weird businesses where no one had any idea how it would make money. And they think they know, and they think it's going to be advertising. And what they're saying now is that the advertising scheme they've come up with works particularly well with mobile. It works at least as well on mobile as it does on the desktop, and that's different than most of the web, including Facebook, where they sort of know how to sell ads on a conventional web browser that you look at on your PC, but are a little more baffled on a smartphone.
Well, what is it that they're doing? Can you explain to us what their secret is?
Sure. Without getting too technical, basically an ad on Twitter is a tweet, essentially. It's something they call the promoted tweet. So it looks and functions basically like any other tweet you would read. And because Twitter is already sort of a mobile product, it was basically created for phones to begin with, it works at least as well on a phone as it does on a desktop. So from the reader's perspective, it's not any more jarring. It's not any worse or better than looking at the ad on a desktop.
So as you say, this solves Twitter's problem, and Twitter's doing well. But that model doesn't work that well for Facebook because Facebook is more expansive. It has a more complicated interface.
Yeah, and let's be clear. Facebook sold $3 billion worth of ads last year. So they certainly know how to sell some ads to some people. Twitter may have done $200 million. So in scale, for all we know, Facebook may be selling just as many mobile ads. Facebook's problem is twofold. One is that there's a debate about whether people want to see ads when they're looking at photos of their friends and doing whatever else you do on Facebook. And two, that small screen size is really constricts the sort of conventional banner ad. Facebook, by the way, the scheme they've come up with to sell mobile ads is kind of the same one as Twitter. They're sort of saying, look, we're going to take stuff that basically functions as content and turn that into an ad, and that will go into your news feed. So it's sort of a Twitter-like solution.
But that basically Twitter is thinking mobile first, perhaps, and web browser second. Is that fair to say?
That's fair. Facebook started as something you would look at on a PC or a laptop. Twitter from the get-go was something designed to be used on the phone. That was the whole point of that 140-character constraint, is it had to do with the characters you have available on a text message. Twitter's now saying that 60% of their users are routinely using Twitter on a mobile phone. That's up from 55% 6 months ago. So increasingly, Twitter is a mobile product. And Facebook is headed in that direction too, but they've got in terms of getting a business to catch up to the usage, it'll take them a while.
Well, Peter Kafka, All Things Digital, thank you for helping us out with this.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, deep breath now. Hold it and stretch. It's time for the Marketplace Morning Report Yoga Profits Update, Jeremy. Lululemon, you know that store, it sells high-end yoga and fitness clothes.
Yep.
This morning reported higher quarterly profits, sales up 25%. But the company did hint that sales growth won't be as brisk moving forward, and that's likely to hurt its share price today, which we'll be watching. But as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports, yoga has become an enormous business.
Chalk some of this up to the yoga craze. Studios popping up everywhere, videos online.
Hello and welcome to Balance Your Life with Yoga for Beginners.
Since the recession started, participation in yoga has doubled to more than 20 million. That's partly people trying to chill out in hard economic times. John Horan of Sporting Goods Intelligence says it's also a middle-aged women's thing.
If a woman's 25, she might still be running a lot. You know, when she's 45, she might be looking for another way to stay fit.
Horan says Lululemon's grabbed the same customer who's shopping at, say, Nordstrom, affluent and not likely to balk at $95 yoga pants, especially if they hold up and make her look good outside the gym.
They have people working in the stores who really believe that because they've got a great flat seam bra that they're making the world a better place.
Competitors like Gap and Lady Foot Locker are going after the women's fitness market as well, with lower prices than Lululemon. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Another big box office movie opens tomorrow. The sci-fi action flick Prometheus will help kick off the summer movie season, which is traditionally full of movies that appeal to teenage boys. But as Marketplace's Adrian Hill reports, Hollywood hasn't forgotten about the rest of us.
Imagine a world. A summer where movies aren't all about saving the world.
War has started.
And instead, about less dire scenarios.
This is a new and different world. The challenge is to cope with it. And not just cope, but thrive.
Actually, that is this world, this summer. You've got huge hits like The Avengers and smaller successes like the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. Jason E. Squire is a professor at USC's School of Cinematic Arts.
And so all the audience is being satisfied this summer in a period that traditionally is simply dismissed as a period for kids going to the movies. Well, that's not the case any longer.
Studios counter-program to the big summer blockbusters. They look for audiences that don't want to see stuff getting blown up. Take this weekend's space horror thriller movie, Ridley Scott's Prometheus. Opening with the decidedly less scary Madagascar 3. And how do the studios pick the audience they're going to counter-program to?
Well, usually it's the opposite of whatever the movie is that's going to be sucking all the air out of the room.
Josh Dickey is the film editor at Variety. He says studios have also realized older audiences can be pretty reliable.
You can find pretty good money in programming summer movies for that over 50 crowd.
Movies like The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. He says studios are typically careful not to open their teenage boy blast-em movie next to another big-name teenage boy blast-em movie. And sometimes with these dates, it's a bit like King of the Hill. A movie claims a spot as much as a year or two out, and then a bigger movie comes along wanting that same spot. And the first movie? Well, it has to scramble to a safer place on the summer movie calendar. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
And finally, David, in Japan, researchers have developed special diet goggles that are supposed to trick us into eating less. This is the latest way to lose weight, I guess. The goggles can make a cookie look twice its actual size, which is supposed to keep you from eating the whole thing. And as a bonus, I guess if you use the goggles to look at your iPhone, you might think you have an iPad.
Save 500 easy bucks that
there
way.
You know. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Midday Update on APM. American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.